Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9. You are listening to The Blank Canvas. This is your guest host, John Cox. I'm sitting in for Amanda Colson and Holly Bino from the National Art Gallery. I am hosting a special edition of The Blank Canvas because I have my father, George Victor Cox, in the studio with me because I'm curating a project called The Unseen Structure at the National Art Gallery later this month. And it's a project that affords me the opportunity to respond to my father's career as a civil and structural engineer. And we've been talking so far the last two segments about his history, when he went to school, when he first became interested in this profession, talked a lot about where his firm started, where it was in Chippingham, and how it evolved to Hawkins Hill. And all the different engineers that have passed through this space, and how engineering, civil and structural engineering, has really become a far more accessible field that more and more people are becoming interested in. And so before the break, we were talking a little bit about specific projects, and that's really what I want this last segment to focus on, some focal points of projects that he's worked on with particular architects, and some projects that are just kind of iconic to the country. And then the last part of it, I want to talk a little bit about the formal aspect of the exhibition, which is really, it's an installation of sorts that I've put together, and I'm working with a team of artists to help me kind of realize this vision that kind of pays homage to his work and hopefully is educational on some level and informative to the guests that come to the NAGB. But Dad, so we were talking about Pat Ramming and the National Insurance Building. And I remember in the interview that we did prior to this 3 weeks ago, you guys were talking about that. And you had mentioned that, you know, there's quite a few people who had doubts about that project because where it was, and people didn't know that it was like on marshland or something, right? And it was like a swamp or something.
It was actually a garbage dump site.
Right, right.
And the method of disposal was digging trenches and putting the garbage in the trenches and covering the trenches up. So
right.
It was questionable whether they could put a building there.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a geotechnical engineer do some investigation. We found it was feasible to do it,
right?
Even though these trenches were there, they were not, didn't pose a serious problem to the project, because in the end we decided to use precast concrete piles.
Right.
So we were able to drive the piles through the garbage or in areas where there was no garbage. So it's quite a feasible project. So
right.
There were a lot of doubters. I remember a local contractor wrote a letter to the Tribune or Guardian saying that an English engineer had told him that no building could be built there. So I thought that was quite challenging. I was friendly with this geotechnical engineer, so I told him, and he said, "Man, don't worry about it. We can get it done."
Right, right. No, that's great. I mean, I don't think very many people know. So, I mean, just for people that don't know, this National Insurance Building is on Blue Hill Road, kind of central part of Blue Hill Road, wouldn't you describe it, on the western side of the road?
The western side of the road, yes.
Yeah, very interesting structure that has almost, looks like some kind of almost like a modular framework that goes around it. If when you've been in that building, the middle section of it is kind of
it's like an atrium.
An atrium, open air space, right? And there was a lot of kind of appendages on that framework that was supposed to keep the building cool and, you know, allow it to be really quite
eco-friendly.
Yeah, a complement to the environment and the kind of climate that we have here. So what was it like to work with Pat Ramming on that project?
Very interesting. Pat and Jackson Burnside, they were partners at the time. Very
okay.
Imaginative and very, very good to work with, you know. No hassles, no arguments or anything.
Right.
They told me what they wanted, and I told them what I could do, and we did it.
Well, good. And then we move on. I like that. All right. No, that's so how long would a structure like that have taken, or a project like that taken, to execute from inception to completion? Because these things go on for years, right?
Well, I don't know. The design didn't take that long. It took maybe it took over a year to do.
Right.
I mean, Pat would probably correct me. His memory is probably better than mine. It took about a year to build it, I guess.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So is the structure as it exists now the way it was then, or had there been changes made to it?
No, no changes to it. I think that's one good thing about it. The government owned it, National Insurance owned it.
Right.
And they have the funds to maintain it properly.
Right.
So they painted regularly and they...
Right.
Like a lot of government buildings sort of fall into disrepair, but that building is normally kept up quite well, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I mean, that's one that I recall as a... So what year would that have been made? That was in the 80s? Mid-80s? Late-80s?
I think so. I don't... My memory isn't that good now.
Yeah. I think if I recall when we did the previous interview, I think it might have been early in the 80s or at least mid 80s when it was executed. So another project that we kind of take a little bit of a deeper look at in the exhibition is the Glass Window Bridge, and that's a project that I think most people know. I think some kind of geography specialists even hail that as one of the kind of wonders of the world, right? Where you have these two water masses come together so close.
Yeah, you have the Atlantic Ocean on one side and you have the calm Caribbean on the other side.
Right.
And it's a narrow strip of land that separates the two.
Right.
So you have very deep water on one side and shallow water on the other side.
Yeah.
And you have this spit of land which is about 40 feet above the water.
Right.
That's the bridge, actually. That's the... It was a natural rock formation.
Yeah.
But then I think the bridge, the present bridge is, I think, the third structure that was built here. The first two were damaged because of corrosion. It's
okay.
A very corrosive environment.
I can imagine. The water and, yeah.
I have reports. I have photographs of a water breaking about 60, 80 feet over the top of the bridge deck and the bridge
deck, so 60 to 80 feet over the top of the bridge.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's photographs of that. I've seen that. I mean, that's one of the challenges I have is how do we kind of illustrate that in the exhibition, that you have waves crashing against the side of a bridge and the spray from the wave goes 80 feet in the air.
Well, luckily for me, there was somebody on the lee side with a camera and
right.
He took these pictures. Unfortunately, I was able to get them from him.
Right.
So I have them in a report, which I did.
Right.
When we did the report on the damage.
Right.
And I think I showed you.
You did show them. I actually have the report. So, I mean, that is amazing. So, I mean, one of the things I wanted to discuss with that is to just give people a little bit of context. You didn't actually design the bridge originally, right? You were there after it was damaged, right?
Well, they were... two bridges before that.
Okay.
And both of them had to be demolished because of corrosion.
Right.
As I said, because of highly corrosive atmosphere. And the bridge I designed, I really didn't design it, but the Ministry of Works wanted a local engineer to be involved with it. So
right.
They teamed me up with a bridge firm out of the States, a firm called Wilbur Smith Associates. And they design a lot of bridges in the States.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with them. Well, they worked with me actually because I had the contract to design it.
Right.
And they had some very good engineers. And I know I had all the beams are fabricated in the States over in Florida. And I had to go over there to do the inspections. And the beams are about 6 feet deep.
Right.
And all corrosion-resistant materials, pre-stressed
right.
concrete strands and
right.
Corrosion-resistant rebars.
Yeah, I remember looking at one of the. I mean, I want to talk about this and then move on to the next set of projects. But I mean, I think the thing that created the damage to the bridge that is of note was the perfect storm, right? A couple decades ago, there was like a kind of a triangle effect of three either tropical storms or hurricanes that kind of created a very, very strong storm surge,
That's correct.
And that is what. And so I remember looking at the report and looking at these same concrete slabs that were displaced. They look like feet, like they were hit by the water, and the water moved these slabs over what looked like to be like 3 to 4 feet.
Yeah, I saw about that.
I mean, I can't even imagine the power of the water and the raw nature, you know, having that much force that it could move something that seems virtually unmovable.
Yes.
And it just moved it like it was a piece of Lego.
Yes.
Right. And so the bridge now, were those beams ever moved back into place, or
they were just kind of left?
They
were left in place, and a new abutment was built.
Okay.
Or a new column, I think, to support one of the beams. And I think they did some restoration work to the abutments.
Right. And I remember when we were talking, we had a previous conversation at the National Art Gallery a few weeks ago, where you, I, Taran Nichols, and Pat Ramming sat and talked. And we have a bit of a dream moment where we said, well, if you could do anything to design the bridge now with money or nothing was an object, and you could just, you know, you could do whatever you wanted to do, how would you do it? And I know some of you said, you know, we wouldn't do anything, just leave it as it is. Or, you know, but I remember, would you, having thought about it, would you do anything different with it? I know.
Well, I think one proposal or suggestion was to build a causeway on the shallow land, you see?
Right.
Well, it would be very expensive, but I mean, it's possible to do that. And leave the existing bridge as a breakwater, so the...
Right.
It wouldn't, you know, it would... would help to protect the new structure.
Right. Or could you just go over the top of
it? No. You could, but I mean, it's extremely expensive.
Remember, money is not an object anymore.
We live in a different country, Saudi Arabia.
Right. Yeah, we could do it. We could do something in that. Yeah, and I mean, it would be nice to have the drama of kind of going over the top of it. I've ridden my bicycle in Eleuthera quite a bit, and that's always a very fun moment of any ride when you're over there to go over the glass bridge. You always stop on it and kind of like look in both directions or whatever. It's quite dramatic. Quite dramatic.
It's a big tourist attraction too.
It is. So the last project I wanted to focus on before I shift into the exhibition itself is, or it's not a project, but it's a relationship that you had with Ray Nathaniels, who is quite a brilliant architect in many ways, like Pat Ramming and Jackson Burnside, etc. But Ray Nathaniels seemed to be quite a kind of modernist in many respects in the Bahamas, right? A man from the UK, but is actually born in Sri Lanka, right?
Yes, but his... I would put him in the class with Frank Lloyd Wright, you know? The buildings he did.
Yeah. So we just for full disclosure, we live in a house, or I grew up in a house that was designed by Ray Nathaniels. And my father did the structural work in it, but it really some of his earlier works, I think, afford you the opportunity to appreciate the engineering as well. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh yes, yeah.
You know, I think we're talking about maybe in some regard a tongue in cheek kind of thing with the unseen structure, etc. But you know, I think the house that I know there's, and I don't want to call names, but there's quite a few people who have these early era Nathaniels homes that have very few right angles. There's a lot of acute kind of angular structures, and he had a strong philosophy about there's not a lot of storage spaces in these things. You can't, just when the houses open up, there's a smooth transition from interior space to exterior space. He paid a lot of attention to prevailing winds, so the homes really married themselves into the landscape in a really kind of almost like a spiritual kind of way.
Yeah, like my house, I remember I bought it because I used to go, it's up on a hill, not a high hill, 70 feet elevation. But I used to go there day and night. And my wife would tell me, say, why are you going up there in the night, buddy? People think you're going crazy.
Right.
But I wanted to get the lay of the, feel the lay of the land, see how it felt with the breeze blowing, where the breeze is blowing from. And I think Ray Nathaniels did the same thing.
Yeah.
he used to go, they see him with his long hair, and he'd just be walking around and just taking in the sights, and, you know.
Right.
You could see his mind working.
Yeah.
But the way our house is oriented is set perpendicular to the prevailing winds. The prevailing winds primarily come from southeast, right? So he set the house sort of northeast, southwest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one room deep, so you don't have any rooms that don't get any breeze at all, you know?
Right, right.
And quite often you have to close the door to stop the breeze from coming.
Yeah, the house can be quite chilly when it is, yes. When it is cold. It's quite cold, right? Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that I've always found very, very interesting. And then he also changed the design of his work, and things became quite right-angled. Quite right-angular. I think that the homes are of note. Of those people that do know his work, you can pick the house from a mile away. You can see one, and you recognize that it's his house, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and they're all over New Providence, it feels like. And
yes,
especially
in Lutheran. Tremendous houses in Lutheran.
Yeah.
Like that's the first house I did with him, I did in Lutheran.
Right.
It's called Paw Bay.
Right.
And very imaginative house, you know.
Yeah.
This high bluff overlooking the water.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's great. So, I mean, she's now, here we are. We have 3 minutes and 30 seconds left in this last segment, and I haven't even started to talk about what we planned for the exhibition, but that's fine. I think the conversation has been rich and fruitful, and I think a lot of people will find it very interesting. And I think it's the right thing that people will kind of come to the exhibition and be able to kind of see into this conversation, which really, that's what my goal is, to have it be an experiential project, right? One that's not bogged down with academics and heavy texts and et cetera. I really wanted it to be about a conversation that I had with my dad as a form of appreciation and love for him, but also as a window to look into how these practices work and how we might imagine diminishing the barrier between what we understand as art and design, commercial art and fine art, applied arts, you know, this kind of ethereal kind of experiences versus plastic experiences. I think that it's a nice opportunity to look at some of the inner workings, the science of what appears to be completely subconscious, I think, is defined by a lot of these professions in a way that sometimes I think maybe even the engineers don't even see it that way. But, you know, I see it that way. And I think that there's an opportunity for me to kind of put that on display in a concise way at the NAGB. So that's something that I look forward to in this Unseen Structure project. I will be working with a few other artists to help me execute the vision, and the idea is to put together something that is simple, effective, and epic. Yeah, you know, I think it's that those are kind of some of the adjectives that I think sum up the artwork that I think is strongest. And I'm really happy to work. I've got about 4 or 5 artists on a team with me helping me, and we have photographs. So we're going to be looking back at the history of my dad's practice, and we're going to look at more specifically the glass window bridge, some examples from Ray Nathaniel's and his collaborations, as well as the National Insurance Building Project. And we are wrapping it up now. We only have 1 more minute, and I'm very excited to have been able to host this show. Again, thank you very much to Amanda Colson and to Holly Bino for asking me to do this. We're on Guardian Radio 96.9. We've been listening to The Blank Canvas, this platform where we talk about the creative class and visual culture and everything that kind of connects to it, which seems to be more and more these days. I'm your guest host, John Cox, and I've been sitting here for the last hour with my father, George Victor Cox, and we look forward to The Unseen Structure, one of many new exhibitions / projects that's going to be on display at the National Art Gallery later this month. Thank you very, very much for listening.